Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering chapters 17 and 18 of The Prisoner of Azkaban. Cat, Rat, and Dog, and then Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs. In these chapters, finally, you know, the big info dump of the climax.
Yeah, they really go for it in that second chapter that we read.
And we'll continue to go into it. And as I mentioned last week, it's a bigger info dump than the last two books, but at the same time, it's not one that I criticize, as a lot of times I will criticize mystery novels if there's too much of an info dump. I feel like this is well done.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And joining us again is our favorite Potterhead couple, the Wilsons, Amanda and Kevin from The Fox and the Foxhound. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Yes, it's our favorite Slitherpuff and Ravendor.
Exactly. Right.
Exactly. Slitherpuff. Wow. Okay, I love it.
Yeah, we had that whole discussion because that's the weirdest combo. The Slitherpuff, or was it Hufferin? I like Slitherpuff better.
Slitherpuff rolled off the tongue a lot better, I think. Even though I would prefer Hufflepuff to be my primary house, but Slitherpuff just sounds way better.
Yeah, because technically, if you do the first one as being the more dominant one, then technically both Jess and I are Hufflepuffs, but we like, yeah, the name Ravenpuff is better.
So cute.
Anyway, so Kevin, what was it like returning to Prisoner of Azkaban after, because you guys are currently in the latter half of Half-Blood Prince, book 6?
Yeah, we are. We're probably more than 2/3 of the way through. And it's fun. It's weird because I'm somewhere between Jess and you and Amanda, Amy, because I haven't finished the series, but I'm further along than Jess is. Yes. So it was good to revisit this part. It's a little bit tough for me to remember what happened in what order with certain things. Mm-hmm. But I do remember how much I love these two chapters, especially chapter 18.
Of course. And Jess, what was your feelings just, you know, reading these chapters? I don't know, maybe the first time, or at least the first time in a long while.
Yeah, because it's still a mystery. I think some sense was knocked out of me at some point. But I really enjoyed these. I feel like I always say that. Well, I mean, unless, you know, the Quidditch chapters and last week's chapters went by very quickly. But I don't know, the setting up those scenes, I really enjoyed how they kind of is coming together at the end of chapter 18. I did not love that I had to stop because there was quite the cliffhanger and I'm like, no, I want to know the rest. But as I always say, I am very loyal. I guess it's that Hufflepuff in me. And I did stop at chapter 19 and did not read any further. So I shall be in suspense until after we have this conversation.
Ooh, it's hard to do.
Yeah. But let us begin with chapter 17, Cat, Rat, and Dog. And so basically, they're all sort of in a daze because they've just heard the axe swing signaling Buckbeak's execution.
This was, I still am perplexed that there was an execution that took place on school grounds. That's a little much, in my opinion. Yeah. Because of course you can say like, don't come over here, kids. But you know, obviously these kids are creeping around wherever. So that was an intense way to start a chapter. That's what I'm thinking so far.
What about you guys, Amanda and Kevin?
I'm always so struck by the really visceral, like physical reactions that they're having at this point, you know, where it's, I can't remember if it's Ron who's like, his teeth are chattering. Hermione looks like she's going to pass out. Like it's, I get that 100%.
It was disturbing to me to see that they sent someone from the ministry, presumably, to kill this animal.
Right.
Yeah, it's, I think throughout our reading of Prisoner of Azkaban, I have referenced the Buckbeak sort of subplot a lot with how we treat like certain breeds of dogs, like the pit bulls.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of misunderstood creatures in this series, and we get more as we go along after these chapters.
Yeah, definitely.
I love Hagrid's soft heart because I share that with animals in general. I just feel like that's, I have always, every time, you know, Neville comes up, shows up, I'm like, yeah, I feel like I'm Neville, but I'm also feel like very connected to Hagrid and his love of all these weird and creepy creatures too. So,
except the acromantulas.
Well, never like, that.
It took you so much to get through that chapter.
It really did. And it will never not. I could go to therapy for it. I don't know if I don't know if I want to yet.
Never read Lord of the Rings then.
I probably won't.
So anyway, so the only one that's kind of in the moment is Ron, because Scabbers is squirming. He's like trying to escape and Ron doesn't understand it, to the point where Scabbers bites Ron and is running away.
This is all in, I'm looking at this through such a different lens, like just now discussing this, knowing what I know from the second chapter. I did not suspect anything that's going to happen in the second chapter, but Scabbers is a whole different critter right now in my mind.
Yes, Scabbers is all, potentially not all what he seems. And then, so they're running after Scabbers, you know, they're running, so they've kind of done away with the invisibility cloak, real smart, and yeah, the big giant dog, aka Sirius Black, arrives, but you already knew that, Jess.
I did know that, and his, I still don't understand this, even after these, his, like, kinship with Crookshanks. He and Crookshanks are pretty cozy.
I love that relationship. Those two, I just love Crookshanks and Sirius, like having this, it oh my god, one of my favorites.
And so, yeah, like it's a lot of action in terms of, you know, the first chapter where, yeah, because Sirius in his dog form, again, I always try to, like, because they didn't do the best job in the films of demonstrating just how large Sirius Black is supposed to be in his dog form, because they basically say that he's almost a bear.
Oh god.
Like, that's so the terrifying. Only thing I can really imagine is, I remember just like, I don't know, I was on some road trip with my parents and we stopped at this like random ass city like Winnemucca, Nevada or whatever, and we were just like walking to dinner, and I just remember this woman had these enormous wolf hounds, like gray wolf hounds, and I think like that is what I think of with Sirius Black.
Yes, those are like the super tall, like really shaggy dogs, right?
Yeah, super tall, really shaggy.
Oh my god, yeah, I feel like that's a perfect description for how I think of,
and with the exception of their shagginess, like their actual form is rather like lean, which makes sense because Sirius Black is so malnourished at this point.
Yeah,
that's really funny that you say that, because I have seen like the movie depiction of him as a dog, and I think what your description would be so much more appropriate, like this, because at this point Sirius is very, you know, very thin, very a wolfhound would be more appropriate like animal form for him, so I like that.
Yeah, so Sirius drags Ron into the secret passage under the Whomping Willow.
Yeah, this snaps this his whole leg. Thing.
And they don't go for help.
No.
That's not, which of course this man. Is children saving the world. They can't go for help, but
right.
Well, I'm just thinking, I guess I don't know. Like, Fred and George automatically dismissed the passageway under the Whomping Willow. They didn't, like, Fred and George couldn't piece it together that, okay, this passage must be here for a reason. Like, they didn't, like, there's got to be some sort of mechanism to get past the Whomping Willow. We may not know it, but there must be something.
Yeah, come to think of it, they really don't seem to have ever put a lot of effort into pursuing that particular passage.
Well, because I guess, I think maybe Fred and George's priorities were different from the actual marauders who created the map. Like, they were trying to, like, get a full, extensive, cohesive image of Hogwarts, whereas Fred and George, it wasn't so much about the exploration. It was more about the utilitarian value of the map, and, you know, they could get whatever pranks they needed done with the passage to Honeydukes, so they never paused to give any further thought to the Whomping Willow passage.
True. Good point. Yeah, the fact that they just have different intentions.
But who knows how to get past the Whomping Willow? Crookshanks.
Crookshanks is up to some... I'm still puzzled by Crookshanks. I don't need any spoilers about Crookshanks. I just think there's more to this lovely cat than I know yet. So, I don't know. I appreciated the assistance Crookshanks provided.
Mm-hmm. So they ended up following, I guess my image was corrupted by the movie version, because I thought even with Crookshanks that there was a little bit more of a confrontation with the Whomping Willow, like in the movie, the way they have it beat the crap out of them.
I had the same thought, Amy. I had the exact same thought as I was reading this chapter again. I was like, oh, that's actually kind of a short thing with the Whomping Willow. But in the movie, it's like...
it's this huge drawn out thing.
Right, exactly. It's so funny you said that, because this exact same thought.
In the book, it's pretty simple. It's like Crookshank steps on the thing, you're in. You're good.
Boom.
I remember the impact the Whomping Willow had in the other books. So maybe
I have been thinking of Kevin's criticisms of the movie Prisoner of Azkaban, as well as other Potterheads' criticisms of Prisoners of Azkaban, and I'm just like, yeah, they've got a point. Am I so easily satisfied?
No. Artistically, it's cool, but...
Yeah, artistically, purely cinematography, it's great. As the adaptation to a very specific novel, no.
Right. Kevin was so mad at that movie.
I know. I think that if I would have read these as they came out and then saw the corresponding movies as they came out, I would have been a little bit more forgiving.
Mm-hmm. With Rambling Raven Pups, like, we don't do the movies at all. Like, we don't do them at the end of each book. Like, we just have a wrap-up discussion about the book. We have no interest in, you know, bitching about the movies. But yeah, a lot of people, I've been reading various things, and I'm like, yeah, people are right. This is just like a Sparks Notes version. This, like, can't stand on its own, and they're using our nostalgia of this general story as a crutch, and I don't like that.
I think that's a proper description.
Anyway, I digress. So they get it, go through the tunnel, and they show up in this house, broken, shattered furniture, and Harry's like, ghost didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This all takes a pretty interesting turn. I really liked how this all developed, and they're in the Shrieking Shack. So we know that they talked about it earlier. I'm echoing. Do you hear me echoing?
Not really, no.
Pardon, okay. Jess. I just heard it right before you said that.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, so pretty interesting spot to end up in.
Yeah, so I think, Jess, you can lead us, you know, through this, and how were you processing, you know, every specific little instance as it happened throughout this chapter?
Well, there's like a lot, there's a lot revealed in this, and I was kind of relieved because some of these things I knew, you know, and was just waiting for them to come out so I wouldn't have to wait for it anymore, you know? So, cause I don't, if I know something about the story, I want to know what led up to it and what is coming after it. Game of Thrones, just real quick example. I knew about the Red Wedding before I watched the show or anything. I did not know what the impact the Red Wedding had. And then I saw the show, and then I was like, oh, okay, now I understand. This kind of whole I don't know what a good word for it was, but, you know, Sirius being there, Lupin kind of grabbing, you know, I think about the one thing that really stood out to me, I guess, through reading this is when Lupin shows up and he helps Sirius up. And I just think about the kind of the way you build up villains as a kid and even sometimes as an adult, that these people are just horrible, horrible people. And why is this person you trusted helping this evil, evil person in any sort of capacity beyond like just running over and kicking him in the head? So I just imagined the kind of shock that Harry and Hermione and Ron had to be feeling when they see Lupin assisting Sirius. So that was kind of what I was thinking through when I was reading this.
One thing before Lupin arrives, there's the whole confrontation of with Harry and Sirius. Again, it's like Harry didn't care that he was just 13 years old and Sirius is a grown man, but it's like Sirius is a skeleton at this point.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't, in the physical fight, I honestly legit don't know as much who could legitimately win that fight. But again, when Harry has his wand and is pointing it at Sirius, and I'm like, none of these kids have been taught super bad evil curses. How in the heck does Harry intend to kill Sirius if that's what he wanted to do?
That's a good point.
I know.
Like, it's just going to be Expelliarmus, Expelliarmus.
Right.
Like, it's going to be over and over. Like, I'm like, do they know some sort of asphyxiation where he can like close Sirius's throat like Darth Vader or what?
Oh God, that'd be a handy spell. I know. When you think about what they've been taught up until this point, you're right. I mean, there's really nothing harmful. Like they haven't even learn stunning spells at this point yet.
Yeah, like even the stunning, even if he wants to just purely incapacitate Sirius, which is not Harry's goal in this very emotionally charged moment.
No. Oh God, I don't know, but is it like with accidental magic where when you're like feeling something strong enough, like I wonder if there's some like actual worry in Sirius's mind of like if this kid wants it bad enough, he might just make me hurt, you know?
That is something, because he made his aunt blow up and he didn't mean to. So maybe there is that sense of, I don't know what I could do, but I have all this energy and I have my wand to right. amplify that energy. I'll just point it at you, direct all my energy, and I'll just see what happens.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of worked out for him in the past, you know, when he's just gotten so upset. So I wondered that about that as well. I'm like, you don't have the equipment yet. You know, you're going to try. And because you're Harry Potter, maybe it'll work out. But it was an interesting, and nobody tried to stop him.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. Well, Ron's incapable of stopping him because he's injured.
Ooh, snapped right. legs.
Yeah, and Hermione is, probably, thinking on her feet is not Hermione's forte. Like, she's all about the planning, and, you know, if she is prepared for a situation, she can enact it immediately in an emergency. But when everything is pure serendipity and spontaneity, she's like, she'll freeze up.
Definitely.
But, yeah, what is it? Oh, yeah, Lupin shows up. But then Lupin muttered, staring at Black so intently it seemed he was trying to read his mind. Why hasn't he shown himself before now, unless he was the one, unless you switched, without telling me? Jess, what did you make of those words?
I'm trying to reflect back on that. I don't know. I don't remember it impacting me as much as I'm probably wishing it would right now. How about you, Kevin? I'm sorry.
Thanks for passing the buck there, Jess.
Yes, I did. I'm sorry.
I just remember being so confused. Like, what in the world is going on? This is kind of like one of those scenes in a movie where you've got like six different mafia guys and they all have guns pointed at each other.
Yeah.
And you don't really know where the loyalty lies. I just remember being so confused. But then by the end, thinking, wow, what a really cool payoff.
Yeah, and I remember you saying too, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to understand what Lupin is talking about and I have just missed it, Or yeah. Is this just all part of the mystery?
I was stopping every couple pages, like, am I missing something here? Right, and she's right. Just said, just keep going, keep reading it, for God's sake.
Yeah. And for me, as much as I will forgive, again, the third movie more so than others, like Kevin, but I, you know, even I will concede that in terms of the climax of the movie, they totally botched it, the Shrieking Shack, which they had Gary Oldman, and I really like Remus Lupin's actor, David, I forget his last name, but like, they had great actors. They could have done so much more with that.
Oh,
I agree.
So much more. It makes me want to cry. So much potential.
And then, you know, again, Jess, you already knew this, but it's the big Hermione lets out that Remus Lupin is, in fact, a werewolf.
Which I kind of, we learn a little later about Snape's intentions, which Hermione obviously caught on to, but was, you know, sometimes the kids surprise me with their, I don't know, societal or emotional intelligence, that she wasn't like running around going, oh my gosh, guess what, everybody, guess what? You know, like with a little kid with a secret or something like that. She kind of kept it to herself. So that did surprise me. Did not surprise me that Hermione figured it out. I figured if anybody could have figured it out, it would have been her.
Yeah, she, of course, in any instance, she wasn't going to go around screaming it to the whole school. But I think the very specific instance of her not telling Ron and Harry is right. Because their things have been so tempestuous, shall we say, you know, between right. Her and Ron. And so she just gave up. Okay, there's no way this is really irrelevant right now.
Well, he's not causing any harm. And I guess, you know, there's a lot of trust in Dumbledore, and as there should be.
I remember, you know, we went through the episode of going over when Snape was substituting for Lupin, and you like kind of saying that's a dick move that he's specifically going over werewolves. Like, did you think it was literally to this point that that was his intention?
I have movie Snape, the things I know, and the admiration of Alan Rickman. I appreciate that. I like Alan Rickman, but when it came to this point, I kind of was like, I saw it coming, but I didn't articulate it. Like, I feel like Snape was a big enough asshole to be like, let's see if anybody can figure this out. And I don't understand. He, a little bit of two-facedness there. You know, he's making this potion to help Lupin out, but then he's also giving the kids an assignment. I just like that kind of passive-aggressive bullshit is very annoying to me. So Snape irritated me on another level in this chapter.
Yeah, I've always had it in my like headcanon that like somewhere in the school year when Dumbledore found out about Snape's little substituting Lupin's class and him doing that, I would have imagined Dumbledore, whether in his office or in the staff room, just being like, Snape, I'm growing tired of you following the letter of my instructions and not the spirit.
Yeah. I like that headcanon. I'm on board with that. I hate Snape so much.
Yeah. So Lupin explains that he is a werewolf and all the staff knows that he's a werewolf. What else? And he's not been helping Sirius and only just recently realized that Sirius was someone to even consider assisting.
Yeah, right.
Oh, the big reveal. It's in this chapter that, Jess, what'd you think of Mooney being Lupin?
I thought that was very clever. And then, you know, of course, I thought, okay, these names are going to reveal themselves a little bit more. Who they apply to surprised me a little bit because we don't have Harry's Patronus still hasn't been revealed yet, right?
No, it okay. hasn't.
I think I see a connection that just, again, I know from pop culture, but with one of the names. But I thought it was kind of, I appreciated the reveal here, especially when thinking back to when Snape takes the map from Harry and kind of how the map reacts to Snape.
Oh, yeah.
So now you better understand that sequence of events in Snape's grudge.
Yes, I very much so. And
now you understand why Snape summoned Lupin specifically.
Exactly, yes.
Lupin goes on to say, I was looking at the Remora's map, saw you guys go down to Hagrid's, and saw two of you being dragged off to Whomping Willow. One of us. No, two of you. That's not a rat, croaked Sirius. What do you mean? Of course he's a rat. No, he's not, said Lupin. He's a wizard. An animagus, said Black, by the name of Peter Pettigrew. So, Jess, thoughts?
That was very surprising to me. I mean, I knew kind of Scabbers had more significance. And to be fair, Scabbers has not turned into Peter Pettigrew yet. So we just know that this is a thing. But we learned later on that he showed up on the Marauder's map. So, and that's what kind of triggered Lupin to be like, I need to go check this out. So again, this chapter, I got to read the chapter to follow, which I was very grateful for because that was a pretty loaded ending. Then we're going to move on to chapter 18, where I didn't get to read chapter 19. So still leaving me hanging there.
Yeah. So tell me, Amanda, you know, you specifically wanted desperately to do chapter 18 when you joined us for Prisoner of Azkaban. Why specifically this chapter?
Well, the Marauders are my favorite subplot of the entire series. And just that whole backstory, this amazing friendship that is being talked about in this chapter is, I don't know. It gets me. It gets me every time. And I love it. And so I knew when it was going to be Prisoner of Azkaban, I was like, it's got to be a Lupin-centered chapter that we're covering because I love Lupin. Mm-hmm. And what better chapters than the ones where it's the whole backstory in the Shrieking Shack, which is kind of like, this actually might be my favorite sequence of this book, really, is this stretch.
Yeah, because I was rereading this and again, this whole chapter is less, you know, action. This is purely storytelling. And again, done in a way that traditionally goes against the conventional wisdom of like show, don't tell. But this is a purely telling, you know, sense of exposition. But it's done very well. And it is such, you know, as Jess, you will learn, it's such an integral part of just the Harry Potter lore.
Interesting. And there were a couple of, I have some unanswered questions from getting through this chapter, which I hope will be answered later, but I did really enjoy this chapter as well. So I'm glad y'all are here to talk about it.
Yay. We are too.
So first they're like, they've gone completely insane. They're on crazy pills. You know, even with Hermione, like bringing up the point of he can't be on the registry because Peter Pettigrew wasn't on the registry. And it's like, you just saw Sirius Black transform. He wasn't on the registry either.
Right.
And again.
Come on, Hermione.
A shell-shocked 13-year-old maybe can't connect the dots that quickly. I'm not saying I would do any better in the same situation, but.
Right. That's a good point. She missed a big blind spot right there.
And again, the typical blind spots that everyone, even for something as serious as this sort of regulated magic, that everyone's going to follow the rules.
Exactly. Yes. That was the biggest thing. I was like, come on, Hermione. Somebody's always going to kind of try to skirt under that. And then just a weak spot for the profession I work with is record keeping. There's a lot of discipline that is doled out because of bad record keeping. So I'm always kind of like, well, maybe there was that too. So her kind of clutching her pearls or shock about that was it was very Hermione from how I know her right now, but and very, very funny.
Mm-hmm. Lupin goes on to explain that basically, it all starts with, he goes from the very, very beginning, which again, if I was serious, I'm not sure if I would have had the patience for this. I appreciate it that we as the readers get this, but yeah, I'm not sure if I was a mentally unhinged escaped convict, whether I could have handled this.
Because he just really, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, Sirius is definitely not very patient in this scene at all, but yeah, he's got the patience of a saint at the same time, because it's a long-winded sort of thing.
So, yeah, we get into the story of Lupin was bitten as a child, and traditionally, like, there was, his parents had little hope that he would have had a normal education, but Dumbledore was, like, became the headmaster and was very progressive, and he's like, okay, if we just take these precautions, then there shouldn't be any reason why he cannot attend school. So they devised this system where Lupin goes to school every full moon, or like the night prior, he goes off to the Shrieking Shack via the Whomping Willow Passage and transforms away from humans, so he is not a threat to anyone.
I think that's really, I think I love, I feel like I say this every time we talk about Dumbledore, but I love Dumbledore's assistance and, you know, patience and desire to help this person. I also enjoyed learning how people or became werewolves in this world. Now I know.
This worked for a little bit. He got some friends, but then again, he kept disappearing. They all pieced it together like Hermione. And instead of abandoning him, his friends were like, well, okay, you know, we'll come with you, but we just won't be people.
That's pretty fun. Right.
So they decided to become Animagi, where, again, you don't, which I think Pottermore has a very, finally put out a very specific, like, all the instructions that that are entailed in becoming an Animagus. And yeah, it's really dumb and really stupid and, like, hopping on your foot and, like, waiting for the rain and chewing, like, a leaf in your mouth. And it's, like, crazy. It's crazy stupid.
I didn't know that. That's pretty silly.
But yeah, it's over. It could be, like, several weeks or, like, what? It's insane. But so, yeah, they illegally decide, which I guess this was possible because James and Sirius were so well versed in transfiguration specifically, which was hinted at even at the very beginning with Ollivander commenting to Harry that, oh, your father's wand was very good for transfiguration.
Mm. Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Okay. These are a couple of questions I have. One is if you could choose your Animagi, I said that weird, but what would you choose? And second, because I don't think they really had much choice in this, did they?
No, I the process is the same for the same person, and whatever form you take, like, that's just the embodiment of your soul or whatever, and that's the form you get. I don't think you choose.
Okay, and it's different from your Patronus then, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think you choose your Patronus either.
No, so I you think don't. You're like
the same sort of spirit there. It's like whatever your spirit animal is, I guess.
Okay. I was just thinking about when I was a kid, because you were talking about how the process to become an Animagi or, God, I'm sorry. and, you know, when I was a kid, like I always had a fondness for animals. I always have over, you know, playing with Barbies or whatever. So I'm sure I think that I had, like, I was really interested in, the Lion King movie came out when I was a kid, and I was like, that would be pretty cool to be a lion. So that would probably be my choice if I had one. Now, what I would turn into, I don't know, probably a freaking rat or a mouse or something very easily preyed upon.
No. I would like to think, because I loved riding horses, I would like to think a horse, but
yeah, that would be awesome.
But again, my Patronus is a raven, so and then your beagle. Patronus, Jess, is the beagle. Yeah.
So, oh yes. Beagles are great. Beagles
Snoopy is your Patronus, Jess.
I was like, okay, this is, it bums me out a little bit, but it's probably the most appropriate one for me, so.
Oh my God, but they're so smart. And, like, aren't they, like, really loyal or something? Like, they're, you know.
It's a good dog.
It's a good dog. They're a noble breed.
Solid dog to have.
There we go. There we go. Solid glad dog. What to do be you, someone's dog.
You, Kevin, do you think your Animagus form would differ from your Patronus?
Yeah, I think so. I think that maybe I would like to be a bird.
Dear God, make me a bird so I can fly. Sorry.
Yeah, just so I can travel easily.
So they succeed. James and Sirius succeed, and Peter Pettigrew is kind of, again, once again portrayed as not being as stellar academically as the other two and constantly needing their help. and assistants, but by the fifth year, they all succeed in becoming animagus. And Peter, being allegedly a rat, he can climb up and touch the root that freezes the Whomping Willow. And then Sirius and James were large enough animals to control Remus as a werewolf. And they just went gallivanting and joyriding.
Yes, gallivanting and joyriding.
They turned a bad situation into a positive.
They did.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. And Hermione's like, but that was really dangerous. What if you had, like, gotten away from them and bit someone? And Lupin's like, yep, I was a little shithead.
Exactly. Thanks, Hermione. I hadn't thought of that.
That, in essence, is sort of the background of why Sirius is a dog and why Peter Pettigrew is a rat. And we end the chapter. Actually, these are very short chapters for as much of as pivotal as they are.
I know. Yeah.
Lupin finally ends with saying, oh, I sometimes feel guilty about betraying Dumbledore's trust, of course. He had admitted me to Hogwarts when no other headmaster would have done so, and he had no idea I was breaking the rules he had set down for my and others' safety. He never knew I had led three fellow students into becoming animagi illegally, but I always managed to forget my guilty feelings every time we sat down to plan our next month's adventures, and I haven't changed. All this year, I've been battling with myself, wondering whether I should tell Dumbledore that Sirius was an animagus, but I didn't do it. Why? Because I was too cowardly. It would have meant admitting that I betrayed his trust while I was at school, admitting that I had led others along with me. So, yeah, this is the crux. I love, Amanda, I love Lupin just as much as you, but yeah. I think this is the crux of, you know, a flaw in his character. And reading this again, I am more critical, maybe if not of Lupin as a teenager and all his shenanigans with, you know, and not wanting to jeopardize the few friends he had who, like, were so loyal to him in this way, even though it was illegal, you know. Yeah, complicated for a teenager to handle, blah, blah, blah. But with him as an adult, with him being a teacher, I don't think it's an accident that Dumbledore got Lupin to come to Hogwarts this year instead right. of the second year or the first year. Like, he could have just as easily gone to Lupin second year instead of Lockhart and be like, come teach.
Right, right.
He's, you know, my headcanon is he specifically chose this year to bring Lupin to Hogwarts because Sirius Black escaped and is clearly wanting to head to Hogwarts. Dumbledore's like, okay, I'm going to bring one of his old buddies. So if anyone's going to be able to protect the students, it's not these stupid Dementors, which Sirius Black already evaded. It's going to be this guy who knows how Black thinks.
Right.
Yes. And
Lupin just totally dropped the ball.
Right. And the reason he doesn't do it, he doesn't tell Dumbledore because he doesn't want to look bad. You know, I mean, it's a very... I get it, you know, but it is definitely a flaw.
For the stakes, it's a very selfish flaw.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that, so this is the part of the story that hasn't been fully revealed to me quite yet. Because I'm wondering if Lupin knows the level of seriousness at the threat to Harry. If I'm saying that right, like obviously I still don't know. I still don't know what's going to happen here. And I still don't quite understand why he's so angry at Peter Pettigrew, but, and I feel like these are things that I wanted to find out, but didn't get to. So, I'll find him out soon, I hope. But yeah, I thought about it because Lupin is, he's on his own. I mean, he doesn't have like other beyond his reputation to protect. He doesn't have, I don't know. He's not like worried about providing for a family. And basically I'm thinking about this in terms of, you know, Muggle world, but I kind of, when he was kind of talking through his situation, I was like, I mean, I don't love it, but I kind of get it is kind of what my thought was.
Yeah. And also there's the sense of, you know, now you're making me feel bad for being so hard on him, Jess, because there is the sense of, you know, his reputation you know, again, or his pride or whatever, or saving face with Dumbledore. Like, from our position, that doesn't seem like the absolute end of the world. But for him, like, the one guy who gave me a job,
right,
who gave me a stable job, and I still blew it.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to perpetuate all these stereotypes about werewolves that were untrustworthy, this and that, even though the whole thing was they became animagi because I was so lonely and blah, 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 and just the vicious cycle.
Yeah.
His self-loathing is really palpable in this chapter.
It really is.
But by the end of his monologue, he says, in a way, Snape's been right about me all along. Snape, what's he got to do with it? He's here, Sirius. He teaches here as well. Professor Snape was at school with us. He fought very hard against my appointment for Dependents Against the Dark Arts job. You see, Sirius here played a trick on him which nearly killed him. A trick which involved me. Black made a derisive noise. It served him right, he sneered, sneaking around, trying to find out what we were up to, hoping he could get us expelled. Severus was very interested in where I went every month. We were in the same year, you know, and we didn't like each other very much. He especially disliked James, jealous, I think, of James's talent on the Quidditch field. Anyway, Snape had seen me crossing the grounds with Madame Pomfrey one evening as she led me towards the Whomping Willow to transform. Sirius thought it would be amusing to tell Snape all he had to do was prod the knot on the tree trunk with a long stick and he'd be able to get in after me. Well, of course, Snape tried it. If he'd got as far as this house, he might have met a fully grown werewolf. But your father, who heard what Sirius had done, went after Snape and pulled him back at great risk to his life. Snape glimpsed me, though, at the end of the tunnel. He was forbidden by Dumbledore to tell anybody, but from that time on, he knew what I was. So, Jess, what'd you think of that reveal?
I had a lot of feelings about Snape in this whole monologue. I feel like these are things I say knowing that I have three people sitting here knowing more than I do, that it's always a weird. So I feel like that Snape was not just jealous of James because he was quote unquote good on the Quidditch field. I think that I don't feel like Snape would be envious of that. I don't think that he's that kind of guy. I had a lot of thoughts about how I appreciated the faculty of Hogwarts helping a student in their time of need. I think that is something that I don't see a lot of sometimes. I am not being critical of teachers. Do not come after me. My mother is a teacher. I'm saying just, you know, kind of maybe I'm thinking more in a work environment, helping people when they're in a bad state. I think sometimes it's easy to just go, you know what, just remove the problem instead of helping them. And Snape is, I feel like he's trying, you know, they're kind of retelling the story and they're kind of like, we kind of did this guy dirty. It's so hard for me at this point to feel any sort of like sympathy for Snape. And then, of course, and I'm just waiting for Amy to do her Snape voice because we know it's coming. So
that's why Snape doesn't like you, said Harry slowly, because he thought you were in on the joke. That's right, sneered a cold voice from the wall behind Lupin. So, Kevin, what do you think about revisiting this big tenet in Harry Potter lore of the Marauders?
Well, it seems a little harsh. Like, you don't really like this guy, you don't get along with him, and he's sneaking around trying to find out what you're sneaking around doing, so you think you might get him killed? Like, yeah. It's not fair to Snape, but it's also not fair to Lupin.
Right.
Imagine Snape gets down the passageway. He runs to the Shrieking Shack. He runs face to face into Lupin. Lupin murders him. Then Lupin changes back the next day and is like, dude, serious.
Right.
You made me kill this kid.
Right.
It doesn't seem fair.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I remember you being really bothered by this when we covered it. Yeah.
And in Snape's grudge, Snape says to Harry, your father was just saving his own skin as well as mine. Where it's like, no, Snape was risking his life, you know, which was true, but it wasn't for Snape, which Snape is right about. But it wasn't for him either. It was for Lupin.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, he could all be true.
Yeah.
Like, yes, maybe he's trying to prevent. He doesn't want Snape to be murdered. He doesn't want Lupin to be a murderer, but he also doesn't want to get in trouble.
There's also that. Because then the fun's over.
Yeah. And for me, I have grown to be more critical of Sirius as I become an adult. But also with Snape here, we're all told that he was a very intelligent young man, even as a, you know, teenager. He was dumb enough. The guy who I know hates me, Sirius, right, tells me to go poke this tree's stump and go through the passage and let's just see what happens.
That's a really good point, Amy.
As I get older, it's hard for me, even though, you know, this is the crux of all of, you know, Snape's position of I was the victim of these idiots. But it's like, you had a functioning brain too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's, you know, that's Snape in a nutshell right there.
But yeah, like in a way it kind of reminded me of like people who like deliberately want someone else to hit them just so they can play like the victim card.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the term is, like performative victim. Like, it's the person who is deliberately being deliberately and consciously provocative to evoke a response, you know, a violent or otherwise, from someone else so they can point the finger about like, see, woe is me. I'm such a victim.
Yes.
You made my brain short out because I had an experience with somebody just like that yesterday. I was like, oh my gosh, it's just this, you know, the playing the victim and doing things that you're setting yourself up. And it's just, it's very frustrating to watch from the outside when, especially like when you said this person has a very functioning brain, but it's like, I guess the desire for attention, I don't know if the desire for, I mean, Snape's intentions were not good. He wasn't like, I don't know. Snape is complicated, but the more I read about him, the more I dislike him.
Yeah. And to be fair, we don't know exactly the nature of the, again, rivalry relationship. We don't know what any other escapades or confrontation between Snape and the Marauders happened. So we don't know what the buildup was to any of this, that finally maybe Sirius doing that was a response to Snape doing something really terrible. We don't know.
Hopefully we find out? Question mark. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why all Potterheads are dying for the like the Marauders book.
Please let there be a Marauders prequel or something, please.
But at the same time, I don't want to financially support her anymore.
I know. Can it just be like some kind of independent thing? Change all the names just enough.
And thus ends chapter 18 with Snape. What is the expression that Kevin uses? Dropping a turd in the punch bowl?
Yeah.
So charming.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. And Amanda and Kevin, you're welcome to chime in if you want to think of stuff, gothic things as well. But we shall progress now to Gothic Geek Out.
All right.
So, Jess, what were the gothic things that came to mind?
To me, and I regret this being my last week's one, but it's going to be it again. It is the three Shrieking Shack, and it is so much more gothic. In this, I mean, we have an individual going into a house howling at night to the point where the people outside it think it's haunted. I mean, I'm like Jane Eyre, blah, blah, blah. I feel like we could list gothic novel upon gothic novel in situation. Like, this is the Shrieking Shack is so gothic in this book. That just reading that, I was kicking myself reading it going, why didn't you save this one? Because I didn't know it was going to be bigger, but I love it. Like, I just, my little gothic heart fluttered when I kind of put the whole picture of the Shrieking Shack and its utilization and its kind of falling apart, you know, aesthetic and all these things. I just like, I'm obviously getting excited even talking about it. I loved that level of gothic. So I'm keeping it as my gothic thing because it's just so goth. I love it. I love it.
to me, it's a combo of, like, again, all the gothic Jane Eyre sort of stuff, but also Beauty and the Beast with all the beast destroying all the furniture.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So for me, the biggest gothic element is the past. You know, in our Gothometer on our Sublimely Gothic podcast, we rank the gothicness of each novel based on categories, and one of the categories is past. So this is a huge portion of, you know, chapter 18, like filling in the gaps of, you know, why is Sirius Black a dog, and why would Peter Pettigrew be a rat, and just unraveling all of this. I'm very specific unraveling because for Harry, he's only seen these idealized versions of his parents, you know, being the self-sacrificing victims. And now we're finally getting some meat into their past of, you know, here are some instances of when they were alive and when they were not martyrs.
That's a good one. The past in that situation. We got a lot of past here. So that was good.
It was almost exclusively past. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know if Amanda and Kevin, if you wanted to chime in with any thoughts.
I mean, I think both of those are just so great. As I'm sure we've said before when we've guessed it, I think both of us are probably have the least amount of expertise in any kind of gothic literature of two people on the planet. But when you both describe that, the Shrieking Shack and the past, it's just, yeah, absolutely. I think you did it beautifully.
All righty then. And now we move on to, I'm really happy with the tarot card that I picked for the day. And it is the Seven of Swords.
Ooh.
Which, here, let me pull up a little description. Traditionally, the Seven of Swords indicates theft, betrayal, deception, and trickery. You may be trying to get away with something and are sneaking around behind other people's backs, hoping to go undetected. If you are lucky, you might get away with your secret intact, but if you are unlucky, others will soon find out what you have done, causing you shame and embarrassment. Be aware that any time you use cunning or deception to gain an advantage over someone or something else, you are at risk of being found out. And even if you are not, the cover-up will require a tremendous amount of effort, and it may not be worthwhile.
Wow.
Absolutely perfect. You couldn't have handpicked a better card for these chapters.
Yeah, so it's always interesting. Like, sometimes we'll get a card that's absolutely spot on, and then others that we'll have to, like, kind of, you know, pick our brains a little. But yeah, Jess, what does this make you think of within the chapters?
I mean, I just think the whole, you know, just honestly, all of it. I don't know. I feel like that's a cheating answer, but I feel like you just described kind of the whole progress through from, you know, the execution, quote unquote, of Buckbeak to the, you know, the reveal of Snape at the end, the kind of the past, the evading things. I don't know. I don't know how to not.
Here, I'm just thinking, how do I compartmentalize this? Like, first thing I thought of with that description is the evasion of Scabbers, which clearly Scabbers has got something to hide.
Right.
And therefore, he's been to the point of literally, in a way, kind of leaving Ron to think that he was eaten by Crookshanks, and now shows up again and is clearly not cool and is not happy with, Ron's back. He's going to come, you know, protect me and I can live my happy little rat life. I'm like, no. So clearly deception and trickery going on with Scabbers, deception, evasion, trickery going on with Lupin in his, you know, shame of not wanting to tell Dumbledore how he betrayed his trust and everything. So again, lying by omission.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Again, the deception with Snape taking the invisibility cloak.
Ugh, I'm just so stuck because I want to say so much more, but I can't because you haven't gotten there yet. So I'm tying up my own tongue.
If this card was good for these chapters, it would have been even more telling for, you know, chapter 19. But yeah, we haven't gotten there yet.
Right. I just want to interject really quickly. And like I said, I'm just going to go with the fact that Peter Pettigrew is Scabbers and Scabbers Peter Pettigrew, whatever. What a weird life. Like, he's been this family's pet. I just, I was reading that and going, man, what an odd life. So that was my, you know, winning interjection there. But that's, you mentioned Scabbers again, and I kept thinking about what an odd, I'm sure he's got a lot of things to say about the Weasleys. I don't know.
Oh God, mm-hmm. He would know all their secrets.
Yeah.
Okay. And now we can move on to the rune, the Nordic rune of the day. And the one I pulled out is called Laguz.
Laguz.
And this is, it has a straight line with like a little diagonal line coming out of the top. So it's kind of like 2/3 of an arrow. So it corresponds with the letter L. And it typically means, then the very literal translation is water.
Ooh, okay.
So Laguz is the water rune symbolizing the element of in all of its forms. Rivers, streams, lakes, seas, and oceans, the rain, and even water contained within our bodies. Is also connected to emotions, the cleansing of unwanted energy through tears, and the unpredictability of life. If you are being tossed around in the emotional waters of a situation, Laguz advises you to release your resistance and go with the flow. Adaptability is key here, as continuing to resist your circumstances will only plunge you further into disharmony. The same is true when it comes to positive circumstances. Acknowledge and enjoy them with gratitude, but don't cling to them as if they are the source of your happiness. Let the fluidity of life guide you rather than trying to control and direct it.
I think that when you said water, and I couldn't think about it like in a direct way as far as they crossed the river to get into the shrieking shack, you know. But I think more of the emotionally charged situations and conversations that were occurring in this shrieking shack. Obviously, we have Sirius just like ready to do whatever to Peter Pettigrew. And, you know, the Snape hiding in the corner. I just imagine him in like in a little corner, kind of like kind of weird like that with the invisibility cloak. And just this very emotionally charged situation that we have, and kind of the waters being usually a symbol of emotion. So that's what I'm mm-hmm. taking from that.
Yeah. Building off of that again, tumultuous emotions being symbolized in water in that way. Like I think of Harry and his just boiling rage towards Sirius Black that is just bursting forth, and it's the dam being broken, and he's just gonna, again, we had the conversation, we don't know how he would kill Black, but he really wants to do it.
Right.
Like sort of adaptability and flexibility. I guess the really only thing I can kind of equate with that is just the fact that the kids are having to adapt to this new information and adjust to the fact that, you know, very quickly having to adjust to, you know, we're being confronted with, you know, an escape convict. The teachers that's supposed to help us is hugging him. Like they're telling us this story, and it's just like basically, and again, it's not a choice. So I'm just going to go with the flow. Like they have very little agency in this matter, but they are, you know, adapting to their situation.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point.
Any thoughts, Amanda and Kevin?
One thing that occurs to me of like the tumultuous emotions is Hermione's reaction when she sees Lupin hug Sirius, embrace him like a brother is what it says in the book. She just yells. She's just like, no. And you can like her disappointment and her, like she really trusted this guy and she really liked this guy. And she doesn't want this to be true. It's almost like a dam bursts out of her, really.
It's like the Luke Skywalker, no.
Oh, right, right, exactly.
Anything from you, Kevin?
Yeah, so the first thing I thought of as far as just water itself is the effect that the moon has on the tides and the effect that the moon has on the water inside of our own bodies. Yes. And thinking about Lupin and the full moon being a werewolf.
You're so smart.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. You got much more deeply metaphysical than any of us.
I also think about how water always, because water is so cohesive, the molecules are so cohesive to each other that if you pour water out, it will always follow gravity and it will travel together. And it's almost like everyone pours into this hole down this tunnel and then it all pulls up in the shrieking shack.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that made me think of the Disney movie Raya and the Last Dragon, because she's a water dragon.
Oh, I still haven't watched that.
I really want to see that.
We need to watch that. Yeah.
No, it's cute. The one thing I thought of, which is not specific to this chapter, but Jess and I had an extra bonus episode, a scholarly Slytherclaw episode, where we talked about the four Hogwarts houses in reference to the elements that they correspond with, and water corresponds with Slytherin. And again, the idea of the adaptability and flexibility when it's portrayed as water, again, like in this rune, is considered a positive trait. But but in the Slytherin context, like, their sort of adaptability and flexibility is seen as cowardly and spineless.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or manipulative in some way.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
But yeah, I think that's enough to work with for Lagoos. And now we move on to fan fiction time.
Woohoo!
So, Amanda and Kevin, would you like to go first?
So, my idea, admittedly, like, in thinking of it, is another one of those that's like, damn it, it's going to be much better for the next chapter. But maybe it's interesting just, you know, without the next chapter too. My idea is, assuming that a person does not choose their animagus form, what would be different? What if Peter Pettigrew, as an animagus, was not the small, oh, you go hit the knot in the tree for us, Peter, animal, but was one of the bigger, you know, more powerful creatures of the group? Yeah. And that's where I'll let that simmer.
Oh.
I'd like to see them all as werewolves. Like, ooh, a pack of werewolves. Oh, you know?
You just wanted Remus to bite them all?
I'm going to make a guess that you guys like the movie The Lost Boys.
Haven't seen it.
Oh my God, your gothic heart is going to burst. It's an 80s movie about some vampires that live in Southern California. It's super good. It has Kiefer Sutherland in it. Mm. It has a really killer soundtrack. It's very dark. You should check it out. It's really cool. But this kind of reminds me of The Lost Boys, this pack of vampires, like a pack of werewolves.
I love it.
So, I think about the whole dynamic changing between the Marauders, because again, by Lupin himself admitting Peter Pettigrew, he always needed help. Like, he wouldn't, basically implies that he would not have become an animagus without James and Sirius's help. And right. McGonagall, we already heard this from McGonagall when Harry conveniently overheard McGonagall and the other adults, you know, her saying that, you know, he was never as good, you know, academically as James or Sirius. So I feel like if he were a bigger animal, I think that would have garnered him maybe more respect.
Mm. Right.
And I think they would have, again, he would have had a greater social capital to work with, where maybe he could have worked through some insecurities and maybe not end up where he ended up.
Right. I completely agree. That was kind of where my head went with it.
Mm-hmm. So that was your collective one?
Yeah, that was our collective one. I think your pack of werewolves is almost a really good secondary one. Yeah. Too,
such a pity that there's no way. Well, again, the Wolfsbane did not exist. The potion did not exist when they were teenagers. Like, I wish not only was there a potion to, like, help Remus maintain his mind, but I also wish that there was a potion that would, like, make the transformation painless.
I know.
Ugh. Like, but maybe later. But anyway, Jess, what was your scenario?
Well, I thought about the whole interaction and, you know, they're going to the Shrieking Shack and hearing all these stories. So I was wondering what if Harry was by himself? What if Ron and Hermione weren't there? You know, if he took off under the invisibility cloak and they wouldn't go. Now that would be really out of character for Ron and Hermione not to follow Harry. But I just would wonder how that would play out, because I am still operating on the understanding that Sirius is not as big of a threat to Harry as we're supposed to be thinking at this point. And that's something I don't fully understand why yet. I'm excited to know, but how much would that have changed things? Or would it have changed things at all?
Well, it would not have changed Lupin coming, because Lupin saw on the map, so he would have followed whether it was Harry by himself or as it was with the group of kids. The only thing would be is, would Harry be in a position to fight Black? And if he overpower, would Sirius overpower Harry? And if Harry overpowered Sirius, would Lupin be able to get there in enough time? I would think so, because again, I don't think Harry has the physical or mental capacity to kill Sirius. I think at the worst, it would be like somehow knocking him unconscious and then Lupin finding them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Amanda and Kevin?
So the other thing that occurs to me is, without Hermione's reveal that Lupin's a werewolf, like, presumably Harry has not put two and two together about that. And it's kind of like, how would that have come up?
Yeah.
You know, without Hermione being like, here it is. You know, like,
she's generally the one that puts two and two together with everything.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, would Lupin have just volunteered that information? And if so, it's like, man, talk about, that's a real info dump. It's like, not only poor Harry, right? Like, at least Hermione in the room kind of knew that one was true. But if it was just Harry to be like, okay, hang on a second. So you were all animagi and you're a werewolf. Like, okay, peace out, buddy. Y'all have lost your minds.
Yeah. And then again, a lot of it depends on Lupin's reaction to like trying to assess how much can Harry handle by himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you have to disclose the fact, Lupin would have to disclose the I'm a werewolf to Harry to explain the situation of why Sirius is an animagus.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, it's just a question of time and speed, and how quickly could Lupin get there, and how quickly could Harry fuck up Sirius?
Yeah, right. There we go.
Alrighty then. My scenario is, what if they did go get a teacher?
Ah.
Because he only has Ron and Scabbers at this point.
Right.
So, yeah.
Your what do question, you guys think? You said, what if they did what? I'm sorry.
What if Harry and Hermione had gone for help and got a teacher? Oh,
okay. Dumbledore would have to answer a lot of questions. I mean, I don't know. I have to think through this scenario. Sorry.
Well, I'm just thinking it's the question of, Sirius at this point is implying that his target at the moment is Scabbers, Peter Pettigrew. And so he's got Peter via Ron. But at the same time, you know, when Hermione and Harry get there, Sirius hasn't done anything yet.
Right.
So was he waiting for Harry for a specific purpose? Like, the question is, if Harry and Hermione had gone for help, would Sirius have had the capacity to do whatever he wanted to do to Scabbers?
I've always read it as there's a pause there because he's like literally catching his breath and resting because he's in such poor health, and he just kind of had a very climactic, I mean, as a dog.
Confrontation.
Right. It never really occurred to me that he's like maybe waiting for Harry. That's a really interesting point.
But yours kind of makes more sense, that again, which is why I think Harry could legitimately beat up Sirius, because decrepit at this point and just again had to drag Ron away.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Harry would come out on top.
Mm-hmm.
I just was wondering if, you know, if a teacher would come, would they come with like a dementor or a few trailing, you know, with them, kind of knowing what was going to, or knowing the potential, would they be like, all right, let's go. And I don't know.
Yeah. Regardless of what each individual teacher thinks of the dementors, I would like to think that, you know, a teacher would understand the need for, you know, quickness, you know, and speed, and probably would not wait, because again, the dementors aren't anywhere in the castle, and we still don't understand how their language works, or how you call them, or how you summon them. As a linguist, I ponder about these things when I should be sleeping, but Alrighty then, and thus concludes chapter 17 and 18 of Prisoner of Azkaban. Thank you so much for joining us, Amanda and Kevin. It's always a treat.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Next week, we shall be going over chapters 19 and 20, The Servant of Lord Voldemort and the Dementor's Kiss. Catch you guys later. Bye. Bye.
Thank you.